I've learned as I've transitioned through life that you do start to surround yourself with people with similar ideas and similar thoughts. And I think if you're wanting to create wealth, you can't surround yourself with people who don't have that same goal.
Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it.
Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars to claim your free course today. Hey, welcome back to Pillars of Wealth Creation. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Today, I'm happy to have Brandon Cutright with me. Brandon, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How about you, Todd?
I am doing excellent. Thanks. Thanks for being on the show. So, Brandon, a little bit about him. He is working right now with the Silvestri real estate team as a what's your title there, Brandon?
So, I just was promoted to president.
President.
Yeah.
the almighty president. So he's got that going on. These guys are doing an excellent job. Ken Silvestri was actually just on the podcast. It would have been a few weeks ago. So look for that, probably about a month ago now. So look for that. And Brandon also is buying up multifamily as well. So right now he's got several buildings in the Lexington area, closing on another 75 unit building shortly here, and continuing to build up that portfolio. So I think Brandon's going to be probably a few thousand units in no time, right?
I hope so.
Awesome. Well, Brandon, with that, why don't you give our listeners a little bit more about your background and then your focus today?
Sure. Yeah, no problem. So I grew up in a town, a small town just north of Lexington called Cynthiana, and I always knew I wanted to go to UK. I planned on playing basketball there, but probably by age of 13, I realized that wasn't going to happen. So I focused on the books, went to UK, graduated in 2010. And then I was a finance major. So I was looking at Wall Street and the dreams that every finance major has, but I ended up finding a manager and training program for a private property management company. They owned and managed 10,000 units and got into that, did that for a few years, made the transition to a bigger company, a REIT, managed for them for 3 years, and then moved to the brokerage side. So I've been on the brokerage side and an owner for 3 years now. And so that's kind of that. I do have a wife, a lovely wife, been with her since high school. And we do have a new daughter who's 3.5 months. So that's my focus right now, but got a lot.
Yeah, perfect, perfect. So, Brandon, I wanted to bring you on because, for a couple of reasons. One is you, I think, are a big driver on this real estate brokerage. And the real estate brokerage, obviously, as I mentioned before, Ken is what the founder of it, but you're a big part of the success right now, story of that brokerage. You guys are really doing well. You've captured the large majority of that market. So I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about that.
Sure.
And then also, you are also investing as well in the multifamily, and I do like that flavor. So I want to talk about that and what your goal is for there and kind of how you're going about doing it, because in a short period of time, you've went from zero to now you'll be nearly 150 units in a fairly short period of time. So I wanted to kind of cover that as well.
So, sure.
Can you talk to us a little bit about, I want to talk about the success of the brokerage and what you guys are doing to set yourselves apart from maybe other competitors that are either trying to get into the market or are in the market.
Sure. No problem. So I'll say a couple things. So Ken Silvestri started the company. He started in 1990 selling real estate, moved to commercial in about 2000. So I give him a lot of credit for the brand recognition, the name. He's a sales genius. He really kind of leads that front. I think here in the past 3 years since I've joined, what's helped us on the apartment side is true operational knowledge. And so there are a lot of brokers that have it, I'm sure, and I'm not saying that, but there are a lot that are strictly sales and don't truly understand multifamily operations. So when we're dealing with clients, when I typically underwrite a property, it's I'm not saying I don't need to push it to try to get the seller the best price, but I typically underwrite it as if I was buying it myself. I keep it as objective as possible. Not every seller likes that, but we found that's the key to success is really knowing your product, still doing the sales part, still pushing it, but having a true understanding of multifamily.
Okay. So you're kind of the numbers guy behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Well, and probably in front of people, but yeah. What else are you guys doing? Because obviously that's one aspect of it. What else are you doing to increase sales and to continue to stay? Because obviously, with real estate, it's transactional. What you guys are doing is transactional. Once you sell a property, you're done. You're not going to be able to sell that again unless you keep a relationship.
Right.
And so you need to find now another property to be able to sell. And obviously you do want to keep those relationships. So you need to work on that. So what are you guys doing to more than that to keep on top of these sellers or potential sellers?
Sure. So we have our database and we're following up with all of our clients quite regularly. Ken's on the phone every day. And I think part of it does go back to my first answer, though. We just in the 3 years that I've been here, we've already sold multiple properties multiple times. And I think when a buyer comes to us, they really want to know what's the value add here? What can we do? And so if we give them the truth, which we have, they've came back to us already and we're selling some for the second time. So I think it's a combination of both. You have to keep, for a figure of speech, knocking on doors, making the calls, keep it going, keep that relationship going, build with buyers, sellers. And then once you do that for a few years, there's just repeat and repeat. And, we started branching out in Louisville. So that's a new thing for us just to grow. We really are doing quite a bit here in Lexington. So we figured that the next level would be Louisville. So that's a new market. We have a new gentleman, Robert, on our team, who's really been dissecting that city and market probably in sections of an eighth of the city at a time. And we talk about every property internally. We dig into every property. We find the owner. We really investigate these deals. And so that's what we're doing for new stuff while simultaneously maintaining the relationships that we have here in Lexington.
So I'm glad you brought that up because in Lexington, Ken's been in Lexington for a long time. He's been a real estate agent since 1990. And so you guys, people know the Silvestri real sure. estate name, but now you're going into a new market where, yeah, maybe some people know about it, but they think of you as Lexington.
Right. Yeah.
So what are you doing right now in that market? How has that been a challenge or how is that traction going and kind of what are you trying to do to continue to grow into that market other than obviously digging and lead generation?
Sure. So it was a little tough. Ken and I had tried to do it, and just we were selling quite a few deals here in Lexington, and it was tough. 1,500 units at a time each year. So we hired Robert on. That's been amazing. We've been able to really keep the pressure on Louisville. And so what we decided to do is we started with one of our clients who's bought, I don't know, 500 units for us from us in Lexington, and they do heavy rehab, 30 to 40,000 per unit. So with the approach being that's a trusted buyer that closes quickly, they've closed in 30 to 45 days before, that we knew if we could just get somebody to agree to let them look at it, they would perform. And so that was kind of the first step. And I'll force them to say, we do have a large deal there. It's north of 250 units that will be closing in 2 to 3 weeks. And so that's kind of our first stepping stone. It's going to be complete value add, over 30 a door per unit. And so I think, that's the approach we took. We are trying to learn the sellers, but we knew we had a trusted buyer. And, now, of course, once that closes, everybody in the area is going to know about it. We'll still send out postcards and e-blast, and we want to make sure every seller of similar properties knows that we got that. So it wasn't easy, but Robert was fortunate to find that, and it was a local owner who's older, and there's no advertising. It was amazing. I'll give them more details when it closes, but yeah, that was kind of our approach, is find the buyer that we can trust, and prove ourselves with the seller, and then now we'll tell everybody about it once we close.
Yeah, just spread the word.
Right, 100%.
The Sebastri team is here. Yeah. So when you're digging into the, you know, you guys are getting into this new market, can you give me some more detail? I mean, you said you guys are digging in. How are you digging? How are you finding multifamily owners? How are you doing it? Because it's obviously that's kind of tough to find, because they're with an LLC typically.
And right.
So how are you doing it? What are you guys doing to?
Yeah, I mean, we really
and to see
do.
If there's opportunity too.
Right. Sure. So I think with a new market, the thing that's fun is, and everything is new. Everything, there's no preconceived notions. So in Lexington, we know every owner of 99% of the properties, whether they would sell or not. In Louisville, you just have to go in with a blank slate. So we take the city and literally on a map, divide it. Robert's been drawing it out. We have several services, CoStar and a couple other, you know, Yellow Pages, Spokio, whatever we need. And so we'll take this 5-mile radius, we'll CoStar every property. And then it's not easy. You're right. There's been properties where it's 5 or 6 layers deep online before you can find an owner. Or we call the management company, or whatever you have to do to find them. But it's not easy. It's not. But I think you just go into it thinking everybody's a potential seller. If not, they're probably a potential buyer.
Yeah.
And if not, then we'll just keep moving on. But I think it's just like anything else, just the more numbers you get, the better. And when Robert's here and can focus on that while we're simultaneously closing Lexington, I feel like we just kept our foot on the gas. And yeah, I mean, we've talked to, I mean, it could be over 100, right, for this one closing. It's not easy. It's not as easy as people think. It takes a lot. And then we hope to snowball it from there.
Yeah. So you think you talked to 100?
It could be of some capacity. Now, it could be as simple as, no, we're not selling, or something like that. But right. I'd say probably 100 properties is better, because some people own obviously more than one.
So from the day you started, newly started looking in Louisville, to when this transaction is supposed to close, if it closes on time,
sure.
How long will that be about?
About 4 months. Yeah. About 4 months.
4 months. Okay. Maybe,
yeah. Robert started in March, 6 months, excuse me. My 6 months. Is off. Yep. Yeah. Bad for a math guy. But yeah, we'll close it in September, so 6 months. It took about 4 months to get it under contract. And then,
wow.
Yeah, so, but fortunately, yeah, we had enough in Lexington to support us, and we were doing fine. It's just we had to make that transition to just go ahead and make the new hire. That's the only way to really, you know, keep our focus on it constant. And
yeah. You know, I think that's important to point out, though, that the reason I asked at the time is because a lot of people will go into a new market, whether they're, you know, a buyer, or whether they're a broker. And even if it's your own home market, and you kind of just get discouraged. 6 months is, that's a long time. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of, if you're doing it yourself, that's just a lot of time. And Robert spends a lot of time on the research aspect.
Right.
And you guys have all the tools in place. So if you don't have all the tools in place, if you don't have the CoStars and you don't have all the stuff like that, then it's even going to take longer. I thought that was important to point out for the listeners. When you're looking at going into a new market, when you're looking at even in your own market and you're trying to make a dent, it's going to take a long time and you have to be patient. You can't just assume that because I haven't found a deal and it's been 3, 4, 5 months that that's not the way to do it. You guys are sticking to it. And even so, 6 months is one deal.
Right.
It's not worth it if you only get one deal. It wasn't worth all the effort. But what you're seeing is, or you're hoping and will happen is once you close this deal, that becomes fuel.
Right.
And now you can use that fuel to be able to show other people, like, look, we're real. We can get deals done, and we're going to help you sell your building.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I feel like that's huge, the proving ourselves.
Yeah.
That's with anything in life. I think it's when you're making that sale, you can be really good, but I don't think there's much better than proof of your work. So, every similar property, every property in the area, every owner that this person knows, we'll try to, get as close to this one as we can and then branch out from there.
Now, I'm going to go back to, you were talking about your underwriting and you're trying to look at it as a buyer, which I think is really cool. Sure. When you're looking at something as a buyer versus a seller and you're telling the seller, like, here's where we see this property selling. What are the types of objections you're getting? What's the difficulty in doing that versus just trying to wrap a property up under a contract? What are the advantages, disadvantages maybe? Let's talk about that.
The tough part for me, I would say the disadvantage is I try to keep something, every property that I underwrite, so objective. And it seems most sellers, we ran into a few that aren't, but most sellers quickly forget that they were once wearing a buyer hat. And so I think you try to really go through the numbers with them while simultaneously explaining how we're going to pitch to get the best price, right? So if we think that the property could has a value add component and the risk could be raised $50 to $100, and everybody would agree with that. Of course, to the seller, we want to try to push that $100, but we still want to make sure it's realistic. So I think it's balancing the realistic expectations, but maybe being on the high end. But it's something that I also be comfortable telling the buyer in good faith and keeping my integrity that yes, this is possible. So yeah, I would say that's the hardest part is that most sellers, once they're in sell mode, it's my property is the best and rents can be raised $200, and we just try to give them an honest, objective opinion while still pushing as much as we can.
You've got other brokers that are competing and, some of them maybe don't do that approach. Do you find that a challenge where a seller will say, well, this broker says we can get this price for it?
They do. Yeah, they do. So we hear that a lot and, that's a big frustration for our team. I think I just try to go back to the numbers.
Yeah.
I think the big thing I would tell a seller is we're salesmen, we're commission based. If I could sell your property for $100 million, that benefits us all. But we're not going to give you a high number to strictly get the listing. Our job is to sell the property. And so I think that's the biggest difference. I see so many brokers who love to get the listing and blast it out there. But I've seen some lately that they don't close. And so that's the pitch we make. We're selling you to close the deal, not to get the listing. That's the biggest.
Yeah. And I've seen that quite a bit too, is where I've got a, there's a property that's being listed and I'm interested in it, but, and my numbers are obviously, so a lot of times in that case, way off of the quote unquote whisper price.
Right.
And then you find out, well, the property never even sold because the expectations were to get whatever, 10 million and everybody came in at 8 and 9 million and nobody would go up to that price. So,
right.
What you're saying is, look, we're telling the seller that you're going to get 9 million and you're going to get, you know, 9 million.
Right. Yeah. We really, I need to do a study on this and go back, but there's been very few deals that I can think of one that we did a BOV on and did a full call for offers that exceeded our top end BOV by maybe 5%. But I would bet that 90% fall within the range. The goal is obviously the higher end.
Yeah.
So we want to push two. I don't want to say that we don't. We want to definitely get our sellers the best price. So we give them a solid range with the goal being towards the top end. But I would say most 90% fall within that window.
Yeah, you guys are going to, if somebody's willing to pay 10 sure. million, you're going right. to sell it to them for 10 million.
Right. 100%.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure, for sure. Like you said, you're commission based, so you want to get the most. On this brokerage, where do you guys see yourselves going with this brokerage? Where, you know, I don't know how much you and Ken talk about that, but where do you want to take it?
I think right now it really is expanding in Louisville. I think we've got our team really set now. We have a great team, adding on Robert. He comes from an operational background like myself. And so I think in a perfect world and where we'd like to be is getting Louisville about matched to where we are in Lexington. And I think that would be amazing. that would be plenty for our team. I think 2018 is going to be a good year. I think when the numbers come out at the end of the year, I think a lot of people will be surprised. And hopefully that takes us to the next level. But I think our focus is maintain Lexington, get Louisville to, you know, first step would be a third of what we're doing here and eventually matching Lexington. And then I think we'd have a good system down. We have enough repeat buyers, sellers. We're doing a lot of value add that's about to come due in both Lexington and then hopefully in, you know, a few years in Louisville. So I'd say that's probably where we see ourselves, just trying to take over that market too.
When you say value add is going to become due, you mean that you sold a property that had value add and it's coming back to the market? Is that what you mean?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
We've got some deals here in Lexington that I know will be within the next year or two that were huge value add projects that have been successful, rents are where they need to be. And the buyers have already assured us that we would sell it. So I think filling that pipeline is great. I mean, the deal we're doing in Louisville, that, you know, they're not long-term holders. They're going to rehab it. So I think once you get those going, it takes a while. Now, we talked about 6 months earlier, but this is 3 to 5 years minimum.
Right. Right.
But in 3 years, and we're going to be hitting the fourth year next and then the fifth. And we've already had some preliminary discussions about bringing these back out. So that's the fun thing. And I think the more we can do in Louisville and go ahead and set that pipeline, plant those seeds, you know, the 5 years from now, we've got that and hopefully something in between. That's kind of fun to see come full circle.
Yep. Well, and there's always other deals in both cities that need some value anyway. <Yeah. laughs> Hey, I want to interrupt this episode real quick to talk to you about Nate Armstrong, our sponsor, Nate Armstrong. He's with homeinvest.com and you want to get to know Nate. So go to homeinvest.com and just connect with Nate. Talk to him. Learn about his operation, what he's got going on. He's a turnkey provider, and it may not be right for you, but it could be the perfect fit. So it doesn't hurt. It's a free call, free consultation, just to figure out, you know, what they do, what they have to offer. And worst case is you're going to meet a great person who's really well educated in real estate. He's done a ton of different real estate strategies and probably he's going to teach you a little bit, even on a short conversation with him. So go to homeinvest.com and connect with Nate's company. You're definitely not going to be disappointed. It's worth it. So thanks. And we'll get back to our show. Let's switch over to some of your investing stuff. So you've got a few buildings right now. You're closing on 75 units. What's the, you know, take us through that. What type of deals are they and kind of what's your investing goals with that?
Sure. So the first deal, I was actually still in the management business and I had a partner we've been discussing for a while, trying to find a deal. And we started small, looking at some flips, and it led to a 30-unit C building here in Lexington. And we worked out an agreement where I got in some equity, you know, a lot of equity for the managing it. So it was very creative on the front end. And that's actually how I met Ken. He was brokering that deal, of course, because he has everything in Lexington, and was hiring at the time. He had just two people had kind of left, and he was really looking to add somebody. So that was the first one, came on there. Since then, I did buy and sell a small fourplex that my wife and I did just personally. Nothing really overly fun with that. Just put down the down payment and was able to sell it in a year for a nice profit. Since then, I have partnered up with Ken. We buy some stuff together. That was a 32-unit C-class here in Lexington, complete rehab. It was 20 vacant out of 32, and we bought it last August. We had it full by, I think, 90% by December, full by January, and then we were able to execute our Freddie Small balance by June. So we finished that.
Okay.
And found this other 75-unit deal that we'll be closing here soon. And we've got some banks, local banks. I know everybody pitches that. Yes, we did the Freddie non-recourse on the refi, which was great once we had built that equity. But on the initial purchase, we have local banks that will let us leverage other equity as our down payment. They'll let us, very creative. As long as you've got a solid PFS or somebody on your team does, and you can prove that you have the knowledge and the skills. It's been amazing how aggressive they've been. So
wow,
we're at now.
That's surprising. That's really good though. I mean, anytime you can use that bank money, that's cheap money.
It is. It's amazing. And I think you just have to pitch your specialty. So mine was the management side. And if someone's better with construction or sales or it just has the money, there's a part for everyone. You just kind of figure out what your specialty is and
combine
someone else. So we're growing. I think our goal is as big as possible, right? We would, my goal was always 1,000 units personally. And I know that was Ken's. And now with Robert on the team, he would like to own some as well. So I think the sky's the limit there, right? I have a strong feeling that you can't be a multifamily broker if you don't believe in the product and want to invest in yourself.
Yep.
I'm going to sell everybody else on it, then I need to and believe in it myself. So, yeah, we're looking to grow that as big as possible.
So I'm going to ask you, I agree with what you said. Like, I think it's great that you guys are buying properties. How do you set aside, you know, you've got your sellers you're trying to represent, you're trying to represent buyers.
Sure.
You're also trying to buy for yourself. How do you keep those kind of separate and make sure people understand what's going on and not taking the best deals for yourselves?
Sure.
So how do you kind of separate all that kind of stuff? Because I think that's obviously very important when you're a broker.
Great question. So I think when you look at the numbers, I do want to throw that out there. In 16 and 17, we sold over 3,000 units. This year alone, I think we hit 2,000 units. So a lot of what we've transitioned to on the brokerage side is we had one almost 400 units this year. Now, yeah, we still sell some sub 100, but I think at the moment, we're not selling as much of the size that we're buying. One of the deals we bought, we actually did list it. And we had a buyer get it under contract and just could not perform, couldn't get the financing. And so when we came in to buy it, we honored the exact same price. We knew that was top of the market. We had fully marketed it. That person couldn't perform, so we matched it. Another deal we had, it was an estate sale, and they did not want to have a broker on it. They were very explicit on that. And so we had to put on our, if you want the deal, guys, it's a buyer hat only. There's no fees. Do not assign this contract to someone else. So that was kind of an anomaly there too. So that would really be the only two, that we've done lately. Now going forward, I think that's 100% something that we've talked about and we want to maintain our integrity. That's huge with us, whether it's the numbers or the selling. And I think what we'd have to do is if we got big enough to where we're buying 1,500 units a year, then we just need to talk together and see how we want to proceed. Right now, so small, and it's these anomaly deals that aren't affecting our brokerage side. We're not buying these. You know, we closed a $24 million deal this year. We're not buying those. But if we got to that point, then I think we'd have to just decide, you know, what hat to wear and what procedures to put in place that's fair for everyone.
Yep. No, I think that's good, valid points, because obviously you don't need that conflict of interest going on too much. Right. And what you guys are doing, where you're buying a 30 unit or 32 unit or
right.
you know, stuff that really other people aren't going to be able to have access to anyway.
Right.
You know, that's really not hurting anybody. Nobody's going to be upset about that. I work with you guys and I know the deals you're buying, and none of them have gotten, you know, none of them have made me go, well, what the heck's going on here? So,
right. Exactly. That's
really important is that's what you want to make sure you're accomplishing. So
100%.
Cool. So you want to kind of, your goal is 1,000 units. What's your philosophy? Why you want to buy 1,000 units? What's the goal with that?
So, when I first started, it was a very simple 100 per unit per month in free cash flow. And that's 100,000 a month. Mm-hmm. And so that was just a good number that I liked. And
so you grew up paying the bills.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. It's, I don't know. I just have always been big on financial freedom, and I've had a huge family. My family's all around here, my mom and dad and sister and all my wife's family. And so now having a daughter of ourselves, it was huge for me to create a lifestyle and be at a spot before I'm retired, before I'm 65 and kids are having kids. I really want that flexibility while I'm raising them. And so real estate was the fastest way to do it. And I had to kind of put my foot on the gas. And so I started that quickly and just turned 30 this year. So I'm really trying to push it and, see how many units I can get before my daughter goes to school. And I would just love to have the ability to just have that ultimate freedom. And so, that's what I'm striving for at the moment.
So you're, you just said you're 30, so you're young.
Appreciate that.
But you're in the business, you're in real estate, you're talking to Ken, who's been in the business for quite some time. What are you seeing in this market? Do you have concerns about kind of the pricing where we're at? Or do you feel like the fundamentals are there still? What kind of, where are you at with that?
I think Lexington is a little bit of an anomaly compared to a lot of the nation, for good and bad. I think starting in the management business in 2010, I have at least seen on the operation side, Lexington at a point where 97% was standard, 98%, and I've seen it as low as 92%, 91% in the occupancy front. I think we're still selling a lot of really good value add deals at a good price per door, or I think the buyer safe. In the long term, I can see the concern with interest rates. They are wearing us some, but once again, we're not selling five caps here. Now on the flip side, some would say while San Diego or San Francisco is getting 9% rent increases, we usually get 3, right? So I understand that our highs are not as high, but at the same time, we have not sold many deals that were so aggressive that even if they only did a 5-year loan and they have to refinance the end and interest rates are 6, they're still safe. Lexington hasn't gotten to the Nashville yet, but we are definitely keeping an eye on it. We're trying to be very cognizant of what Freddie and Fannie are doing right now when we're pitching a deal. Even now, a 6 cap on a nice B property was no biggie. That was probably standard. And now we're with interest rates closer to 5, we're watching that. So we try to be careful and set up our sellers to receive a good price, but our buyers to be successful in the long run. If they fail, we all do. So we're kind of keeping an eye on it, but I feel Lexington's good now overall for the market. I think it has gotten very aggressive nationwide, but I really focus here, and I think we're still safe.
Yeah, one of the things with Lexington in, and there's several markets around the country that are like this, but it's just a slow, steady growth. You're like you said, you're never gonna likely never gonna see a 10% rent increase.
Correct.
Probably never. But you'll see 1-3%, and same thing with population growth. You're probably never gonna see 10% population growth in a year, but you're gonna see 1-3%.
And, exactly.
That's just kind of how it is, slow and steady. Nothing sexy, just there. So
that's what we like.
By the way, if you're a buyer, stay away. So,
man, you're pitching it up good here.
Yeah. So, Brandon, what's you haven't been in the business a ton, but you've got a lot of experience. What's one of the biggest mistakes you've made, and how have you learned from that?
Oh man, I thought I had prepped for a lot of questions. I would say I'm going to give myself a hard time and say not starting sooner. I know that a lot of people hear me my age and think that I'm kind of crazy, but I listen to the Bigger Pockets guys and I listen to your podcast, and I realized that I bought my first home at 25. We just sold it. And if I knew what I knew now, I would have done some house hacking. I would have bought a fourplex and lived in one, or an eightplex. And I think I could have partnered that up with the management side and the path that I've still taken and grown even faster. So I think I just had to remember not to be grateful for where I am, but also not realize that more is not impossible. But outside of that, I've been blessed. I think that would probably be my biggest thing. I really, there were times in the management business where I stressed a little bit, and on site can wear you down. And but it's all worked out. It's all led me to here, and I can't really complain. So yeah, I'd say not starting sooner, but there's nothing you can do about that now. So
right. Yeah, but that speaks to people that are trying to get started, just dabbling or just thinking about it. I know there's people that listen to this who, like, this is, you know, they're just getting it in their heads and they're young, and yeah, starting when you're young, like you said, starting instead of just buying that first house and living in it yourself, house hack, you know.
Yeah, 100%.
Or like I did, I bought a foreclosure and I renovated it while I lived in it.
Perfect.
And then sold that and took the profit to buy, you know, the next house and kept on doing that. So whatever you can do to get in to be able to start your investing career, I think is going to really help.
100%.
What are three key factors to, whether you want to speak to yourself or the Silvestri, but what are three key factors to your success?
So would you say, and I think they're going to cross over, but just to confirm, would you think of the brokerage side, the ownership side, both?
Yeah, whatever you want to cover, they're probably pretty similar. So however you want to talk about that. Yeah.
Okay. I would say number one is integrity. I think that a lot of people see commercial brokers and the fees and the suit ties, and they get excited about that. And we all do, right? You're working on a big deal. You get the commission agreement signed and you can't help but see the check and envision that. But I think above all, you keep your integrity. And if that caused you to lose a deal, then I can still sleep at night. So I think that's probably the number one key to success. I think number two, a close number two, is teamwork. And so I think that Ken, Robert, and myself have really been able to gel. You know, Ken and I have been doing it for 3 years, and now with Robert for the past 6 months. If it was a team of, as great as we are individually, we all have our weaknesses. And so I think if it was three Kens, three Brandons, or three Roberts, we wouldn't be here. So I know my strengths and weaknesses, and so do the other two guys, and we respect and appreciate the other two on that. And so I would say that's the top two. And then number three, I would say, is persistence. And so I think it's good to know your product, know the market, But I would say you only get that by being persistent. So I would put that above knowledge. So yeah, just staying persistent. And it's not an easy or fast journey, right? It's, if you're someone who is looking for a check every week, then maybe real estate investing or brokerage is not for you. It's a grind and a grind. But the payday at the end is great on either. So I had to say persistence.
Cool. I want to go back to, sure, what you kind of talked about. You're the numbers guy, you're the underwriter, you're looking at things as a buyer. What are maybe some key factors that you look at on a property that I think that you think are really important that you can pass along to us?
I would say probably the biggest thing is on the repairs and maintenance side, because taxes and insurance are pretty set. You can have a good idea of your income based on occupancy in the market and a strong manager. But I think really balancing the size of the property versus staffing versus contracting. So I'm going to underwrite a 60 unit property, definitely different than a 100 unit property, right? Or even let's say an 85, let's go in between. An 85 unit property could still support a full-time maintenance supervisor, but at only 85 units, you can do most things in-house. And so your contract labor and your outside repairs and maintenance are going to be a little bit lower to compensate for that. Whereas at a 60 or a 50 unit property, unless you have a big management company that has payroll, and which would be a great idea, but if you don't, then you're going to have to contract everything out. So yeah, you may not have any salaries, but I'm going to boost the contract labor a little bit higher. It's more expensive to call a plumber, more expensive to call an HVAC technician, an electrician. And this can go every level. So same thing, if I'm doing a 220 unit property that can support two people, then they're being very efficient. A 260 unit property that wants to go up to three people, that's perfectly fine. But it's going to be a little bit more expensive. So I really try to hone in on the repairs and maintenance side.
Cool. I like that a lot. Because that definitely makes a big difference. I've got plenty of experience with that. And it's easy to think that you can get things done for cheaper, you'll be more efficient. And oftentimes that's a big mistake to think that way.
It is. It happens to all of us.
Yeah. Well, cool. Anything else on the underwriting that you really like to kind of hone in on or look at?
I would say probably the level of service that's expected. That's another thing that can tie into on these larger deals. If we're selling let's say it's 115 or 130 unit deal, and it's average rent of $600-$700. It's got an office, it's got a manager, maintenance. That all makes sense. Now, when we have someone come to us and they're selling a boutique property, it's 100 units, average rent's $1,500 per apartment. I'm going extreme. You may need two people. They're expecting that level of service in the office to always have something. If it's an A-plus property, then you just have to beef it up. I mean, you just do. And so I think the one thing I would say is with underwriting, it's good to have your ratios and your national averages and your local averages and your metrics, but not being afraid to truly dig in and then be able to explain it. If that was a 100 unit property and someone said, Brandon, why are you underwriting two people? Well, the average rent's 1500. It's bringing in as much rent as the average 200 unit property in town, and that level of service is expected. So you need to be able to stray away from just always using ratios and statistics and really understand why you're coming up with what you do. I think that's kind of a big thing.
No, that's a fantastic point. I think a lot of people look at like these rules, like the 50% rule, or, you know, we got X amount per door, and it's like, why are you even coming up with that number? Just because somebody told you to, or have you actually thought about that? I think so many people don't think about like why are we actually coming up with some of these numbers?
That's spot on. If I can, I'll throw in one perfect example that always gets me is in Lexington, taxes reassess, or in Kentucky, taxes reassess based off the purchase price. And so it's easy to say, well, this 100 unit property should be operating for $3,500 per door in expenses. So $3,500 per unit per year in expenses. But what people forget is if it's a $30,000 per unit property in Lexington, you are paying $360 a year in taxes on it. So $30,000 per unit, $360 for taxes. That same property, if it sells for $100,000 a door, is $1,200 per unit in taxes. So just in taxes, we have almost $900 difference. And so that is why I don't always like to use ratios, unless they're the exact same. I mean, if they're very similar price per door, same submarket, then yes, I like to compare them just to see who's doing well and who's not. Yeah. There's little stuff like that, that the tax thing especially, that's you can't control. It just is what it is. That can really throw off those ratios and rules that a lot of people try to use.
Well, and same thing with utilities too. I mean, if you got tenants that pay all the electric and the gas versus the landlord, I mean, that's huge.
It's huge. That's difference. Can make your rent per square foot look really high, but
true,
you need to really net of utilities to make it apples to apples. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to wrap up. I got a couple questions, before we, completely wrap up. What's a favorite book that you're reading right now that you really like or recently?
Let's see. So I'm finishing Obama's book, Letters from My Father. So I know that's not a business book, but, if you're just looking at a book that really was big for me, there's just a lot of personal similarities between himself and I, and having a new daughter, that was a really big thing for me to read. So that's the book that I'm actually personally finishing on a non-business front. So that's a really big one. I say that's really all I'm reading at the moment. I've got a couple kind of that I'm going to get at, but that would be one that I'm finishing now. It's just keeping my in check.
Any business books that you've read within the last few years that you've or maybe that you've ever read that have really made a big difference?
I would say, so this is I know a lot of people say this, but it really has changed the way I look at everything. That's Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Sure.
I know it's a big standard and a lot of people say it, but it's true. I've read it multiple times. I'm going to try to read it about once a year. And I think it's just combining good debt and good strategies to maximize income. I won't get too much on a rant on that, but I'm a huge believer in good debt and multiplying your returns. So when I read that book, it was just different than what you're usually taught in school.
Yep.
And so I would say that's one. Cashflow Quadrant.
Yep.
I'm finishing that. I was about halfway through that and started on the Obama book. So I'm going to pick that back up. But that was really good. If anyone hasn't read that, I know you have, Todd. That's just a different way of thinking. It's once you go from how much do you make per year to how much do you keep per year and the strategies of both. So that's an eye opener that most people don't think about. I would think 90% of America thinks in gross income, which is fine. But when you move to an investor side, or commission-based sales side, it's how much you keep. And so that's where that cash flow quadrant comes in.
That's pretty funny that you mentioned that. I've been talking about that quite a bit lately with investors and just with that kind of people I've been talking with, is everybody talks so much about gross income,
Right.
Like, this company makes, $1 billion gross income. Okay. Right. Great. What's their net income? Cause this, this company over here that's only making, 200 million in gross income is actually making more net income than this $1 billion company, and that happens all the time. Same thing with apartment owners. I've got some people I know and they're great. They're doing great. They own a lot of units, but they've got very small ownership interest in those units. Sure.
Right.
So they're 5,000 or whatever you want to call it units is really only, maybe 8 to 10% of those units. So it's great. It's still awesome. But you've also got to look at that and go, okay, what's really going on here? as that person, you know, if they have to see where they're at versus just focusing on the big number.
100%.
So, cool. Last question.
Okay.
What are your three pillars of wealth creation?
Yeah, those are this is always the good one. So I would say that number one is stick to it. Invest. I know this is kind of the number one thing that you hear from any advisor, but it really is true with compound interest. And never think you're too young to start that. Once again, I'm not the oldest person, but when we worked, my wife and I, on the kind of the corporate side, we always did 401ks and IRAs, and I do a SEP now, and just watching those grow, it's never, and at the same time, never think you're too late. Just get started. Mm-hmm. So I think that's number one. Number two would be find your niche, right? And investing, because I think if you enjoy what you're investing in, then that's going to create the wealth.
Yeah.
Right. Some people hate the stock market, and there's nothing wrong with that. But if you do, I would bet that you're not going to make any money off of it. Even if you're the smartest person in the world, if you don't believe in it and you don't really focus on it. And so, yes, I love real estate. I know you do. And that's kind of our thing. And so I'm a big believer, and I pitch that to anyone I can, but I would make sure that they love it, because there's ups and downs. And if you don't love it enough to go through the downs, then you might not have the true wealth. And then I would say number three is creating a team. Once again, I know this is something that a lot of people say, but I would expand it a little bit further. And it's not just your property manager and your attorney. I mean, those are huge to have, and your broker. I mean, I think those are non-negotiables, but your family, your friends. I've learned as I've transitioned through life that you do start to surround yourself with people with similar ideas and similar thoughts. And I think if you're wanting to create wealth, you can't surround yourself with people who don't have that same goal, right? It's how it is. It's this stuff is said a lot, but I've learned it's factual. So that's what I would stick with.
Awesome. Well, great stuff. Appreciate you joining us. How can our listeners get in touch with you?
Sure. So they can reach me at Ken Sylvestri. Sylvestri.com. And I don't mind, I'll give out the office number here. We've got 859-263-2300. I'm of course on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. So feel free to add me on any of those, but you'll see Cutright, Cutwright is not a common name. So if you Google Brandon Cutright, you'll find any of my information, there's not a lot out there. But the few things that are, you can find.
You got to start putting it out there, man.
I know. Yeah. Yeah.
You got a lot of knowledge to give.
Right. Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Todd.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you joining me, and have a great rest of the day, man.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Todd. I really appreciate being on here.
Hey, special thanks to Brandon Cutright for joining us on the show today. And three things I took from this show. One, first of all, he talks about making sure you build your team. I have a high quality team. Find people that you can surround yourself with that are going to be better at certain tasks than you are. The next thing he talked about is in finding your niche, making sure you have a niche that you can really master and you can really enjoy. So find your niche. And the last thing he talks about is invest and invest right away. Invest as soon as you can, and invest. So three good things from Brandon. Appreciate him joining us on the show and the time he was able to spend with us. Don't forget to reach out to Brandon. It is Brandon@KenSylvestri.com. So Brandon@KenSylvestri.com. Reach out to him, and hope you enjoyed the show. If you did enjoy the show, or you do enjoy the show, make sure you subscribe if you haven't already. And if you are a loyal listener and you've listened to the show before and you haven't already, I'd love to have you go on to iTunes and give us a rating review, hopefully 5-star, but give us a rating review. That helps us get noticed on iTunes and helps us get more listeners, be able to reach more people. So if you could do that, that would be awesome. And feel free to go on to Facebook too. Facebook, our Pillars of Wealth Creation. We have a Facebook page, so you can go on there and check out. We do some updates. I've probably got to get better at doing that, but we do some updates. We try to post some articles on there, and it's also a discussion board. So if anybody wants to ask any questions or talk to me or John, you can do that on our Facebook page as well. So thanks for listening. Have a wonderful day, and hey, make every day a Saturday.
Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars. To claim your free course today.